Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Len Keggy is the proprietor of Setma Cargo and Setma Racks. Based in Eugene, Oregon, he describes Setma as being run by one guy in a simple shop without automation, mechanized assembly, robots, lasers, sorcery, superpowers, or psychic beavers. Really. I spoke with him on April 12th, 2012, about his business.
Hey, man, good to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I'm doing great. So here we are on the Sprocket Podcast with Lane Keggy of Setma Cargo, based out of, is it still out of Eugene?
Yes, sir, for the time being. Yeah.
Okay, because I think Logan Smith is the guy that initially recommended you to us for an interview, and it was ages ago, and so I'm finally getting in touch with you and talking to you. But he had said something about a possible move, so.
Right. Yeah, my wife, my wife and I have been in Eugene for about 5 years and just recently decided to aim for a change of scenery, so we're gonna move.
Good luck to you, sir. So you've been building bikes for some time, bikes and things to carry stuff with bikes. So which would you like to start with?
Right, well, I guess I should start with the racks. Setma originally started just as a rack building operation in my garage in San Francisco. This was about 7 years ago. And, I was a bike messenger in San Francisco and, needed a way to carry heavy stuff. And, it's just, something that, was born just out of necessity. I had racks and baskets that were on the market, just weren't cutting it. You know, there aren't many racks out there. At least back then, there weren't many racks available that were big enough, wide enough, and strong enough to carry big, heavy stuff for my messenger job. So I just decided to make one for myself. You know, my messengers for a long time, particularly in San Francisco, had been, for years, they've been cutting away. They've been sort of modifying the walled paperboy baskets. And the way that they would do so is to cut away, you know, with like wire cutters, where cut away the sides and the front of the basket, which would make like a leave like an L-shaped platform thing on the front of the rack and or on the front of the bike, I should say. And that worked great for a lot of people because you could carry extremely oversized boxes and square things and, you know, things that wouldn't fit into a basket. You could manage this way. So I just looked at that design and I sort of improved on it, and I used heavier steel to make something similar, and that's how it all got started.
I was thinking a friend of mine started, I think he was, you know, out of money and wanted something to carry stuff with, and so he kind of hauled out a milk crate, just kind of cut off the sides. I imagine it's probably kind of what you're talking about, but you were looking for something with a bit more capacity and a bit more load-bearing strength?
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, the basket's got the... with the sides in the front there, it's very limiting if you need to carry something really big. So, and as a messenger, you never know what you're going to run into. You're never going to know what your dispatcher is going to call on you to carry. So, yeah, that was my thinking. I wanted something flat without sides, and I needed it to be really, really strong. And that was it. So I never had this idea that I was going to go into business for myself or anything like that. I was just interested in doing my job, and I wanted to make my job as easy as I could. So the first rack that I built for myself was just pretty much an experiment, and it was really just for myself. And so I took it to work, and immediately it was obvious that this thing was going to be useful to me. So
yeah, was
particularly,
that did you start with steel?
I did start with steel. Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that made sense. I mean, I had just married, my wife and I had just gotten married, and as a wedding gift, some friends got together and bought a welder for me. And so I had that thing in my garage, and part of making this rack was not only out of necessity, but just as a desire to make something with this new welder that I had.
Sure, just kind of testing your creative limits and whatnot.
Sure, right. And I guess I stumbled on something good because it ended up working out. It's very useful for me at work, and it paid for itself immediately because I don't know if you know this, but bike messengers typically don't get like an hourly wage like a regular job. You get it's a commission based job, so you make typically about half what your company makes.
Okay, so this is per delivery or something like that.
Per delivery, yeah, that's correct. So, but you get a commission based on sometimes the size of the package, or the weight, or the distance, or the speed. So if you can somehow manage to carry a really big, heavy box, then you're going to get paid. You get paid better for it.
Yeah, it makes me think of the commercial trucking industry. How they're paid usually, I think, by the mile more than by the hour. And so, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to load up as much as you can and just get it out there.
Sure. Right. And as a benefit, I mean, if you're the only one, the only one on your company, at your company that can manage to, if you're the only one that can do this, then chances are your dispatcher is going to give you more heavy jobs and big packages and things. So it worked out immediately. It was obvious I was making more money. And so before I knew it, other people wanted them too. It was, the rest is history. I had other guys at my work ask me for racks too, and next thing I knew I was do the messenger job in the daytime and then at night go home and make racks for my coworkers.
There you go. So it kept you pretty busy.
Yeah. But it was great because, I mean, that's what I like to do anyway. I would be in my garage making things anyway, so.
And that's what people call a career is when you're doing something that you would do for free, but you're getting paid.
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm looking at some pictures on your website of the rack side. There, I guess there's two sides to your website. There's the rack side and the cargo bike side. But the pictures on the rack side just have some fantastic pictures of. It looks like there's a fellow who might be a messenger with an enormous stack of either pizza boxes or something similar.
Yeah, that's a that was a guy at the Cycle Messenger World Championships in Canada a few years back. It was, I think that was a messenger.
That was an impressive
Morgan
load.
Morgan sent me that picture.
Yeah, and then there's also like one of those carry-all sort of totes, the big Rubbermaid totes. There's a fellow with a surfboard on the front. It just looks like these things are burly and could carry anything you wanted to carry.
No, that's the idea. You know, it's, like I said, it came from my job as a messenger, so that stuff needs to be dependable and bomb-proof, as the kids say.
It seems as though steel is the material to do that with, too. Like, there are many racks that are made of other materials, like aluminum, I think, is pretty popular if you're weight-conscious. But like you're saying, I suppose if you have more to carry, you probably want something that's a little bit stronger.
Sure, of course, yeah. I mean, steel, that's the only thing that makes sense to make to use a rack. It's weldable, obviously. It's somewhat flexible and repairable if it breaks.
Definitely.
And it's relatively inexpensive, too.
Yeah. I suppose, is it easier to work with, I suppose? Aluminum cannot be welded, is that right?
It can be welded, sure.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. There's a lot of bicycles made with aluminum. But it could be done, but the properties of aluminum are a lot different than steel. Steel is just more appropriate for racks.
Okay. Yeah, I think the one thing that I've always thought, just because I do a lot of bicycle touring and going out in places where there are no bike shops for miles and miles around, and the idea that you might be able to bump into someone with a welder and have them fix your rack or your bike if it's made of steel has always been pretty appealing to me.
Right, sure.
So as far as the bike side, you've got a bunch of these lovely-looking bicycles as well. You want to talk about those a little bit?
Thank you. Yeah, of course. The bikes kind of came about sort of accidentally also. So, I had been making these racks for a while now, and this is, eventually the racks really, I sort of reached this point where I had to make a decision whether I was going to continue the messenger job or just go full force with these racks. And so I did. I just, things blew up. I had a website. And I should back up a little bit and just to sort of explain how the racks ended up blowing up real big. So I was in, like I said, I was in San Francisco making these racks, and more and more people started hearing about them, and they started to get emails from other messengers in other parts of the country asking for these strange racks. So I said, sure, yeah, I would. People would ask me if I could make them and ship them around the country. I said, of course. And so then I needed a website. And so I had to figure out how to make a website and bought a digital camera. I had to figure out how to take pictures of these racks and put them up on the website and figure out PayPal and all that. And so before I knew it, I had a real business going and was then making racks full time. And so when the racks were finished, it was time to bring them to FedEx or UPS to ship them. And I could handle that for a short while on my bicycle, but next thing I knew, I had like 10 or more of these boxes I need to bring to UPS. And so I figured out I had a cargo bike, and cargo bike would be appropriate. So I chopped up a old mountain bike and modified it into this Long John-style bicycle, which is popular in Europe for 100 years or so. And just used this bike as a delivery, a means of delivery for getting my racks to UPS.
Yeah, and you were saying this is a kind of a European style. They're becoming more prevalent in certain parts of the U.S., especially here in Portland. I think a lot of people have just started to get really excited about like front-loading cargo bikes and that sort of thing. But they're not very common.
No, they're not very common. A long tail is a little more popular. The extra cycle, of course. This particular cargo bike I make is maybe a little intimidating to the novice. If you're not a real avid cyclist, maybe it's a little strange looking. So I think that has it going against it.
Sure, like maybe it looks harder to ride than it actually is.
It looks weird, yeah, right. It looks weird, it looks confusing and difficult to ride, but it's not. My point was, so I had this sort of modified bicycle at my house, and a good friend of mine came over and happened to see it. And this friend of mine is went to school for engineering and real gearhead and fabricator and real smart guy. And he agreed to work with me to sort of modify the design a little bit. And I told him about some specific design features that I wanted. And so he and I worked together to make the current Setma Cargo bike that you see on the website there.
Yeah, it's a really good looking machine. It seems like the sort of thing that you could do a lot of different things with it. And once again, kind of like on the rack side of your website, there are all kinds of things being carried. On the cargo bike side of your website, there's also many examples of the kinds of cargo you could carry and what it looks like and its many functions.
Right. Yeah. The original plan was for this cargo bike was that I wanted a cargo bike that could have a flat platform area rather than a box, you know, like a traditional European style long john or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wanted just a flat platform, just like my racks. So if you needed to carry a washing machine or a refrigerator, you could do that.
So let me ask you, has that been done with one of your bikes?
No, I haven't had to do that, but I suppose I could.
It could be done. Yeah,
sure. that first bike was not intended to be sold. It wasn't really going into business again. It was just that was just a funny idea I had, something that would be useful to me. And next thing I knew, I had pictures of this bike up on some bike forums, and people seemed to really like it. And then I got interested people who wanted to buy these. So that was it. So I started making cargo bikes.
There you go. That's kind of cool. It's nice to just kind of find that almost by accident, it seems. Like you just kind of stumbled into it as you were doing something else that you loved.
Yeah, it was very comfortable way to go into business, I guess. Relatively stress-free, at least at the beginning it was.
Yeah, one of the things that strikes me is that this certain bicycle that you've got, it looks like it's got a lot of different applications. Like there's the picture of the guy carrying two kegs, which, you know, I assume even full, it's not too much of a stress on the bike. It's a strong bike. And then you've also got a picture of this kind of Bockfeet style box that you've got where your children could also sit in there if you have them and you want them to ride with you.
Yeah, right. The bike is really versatile. It's suitable for sort of delivery of big stuff like those kegs. Or there's also a box that can fit onto the bike with a bench, and that's more appropriate for families who want to carry kids or whatever. So But yeah, it can be used in many different ways, and sort of suitable for lots of different people, different applications.
Yeah, it seems like that's probably one of the more daunting things that I think most people bump into is, you know, you get really excited about bicycles and the sustainable aspect and wanting to use that to replace your car. But a lot of people, I think, probably bump up against the hurdle of family and how do you deal with transporting children? And a lot of people either feel like it's not safe or their bike just can't handle it. Have you had some good stories of customers who have been able to kind of surmount the needing to have a car because they have one of these?
Yeah, all the time. Absolutely. I mean, that's most people I sell bikes to are families who have want to lose a car, maybe sell a car and buy one of my bikes instead, and use that as the family vehicle to move kids around. And I get emails all the time from families who are doing just that. They're using my bikes to as a family vehicle, move kids to school, get groceries, and so on. It's very nice. I feel very grateful. It's out there getting used on a daily basis. It's very gratifying.
Yeah, I was going to say it just seems like you're providing an ability and something that you know that people can use to live out their ideals and their convictions in a way that that finally seems actually doable. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So I noticed there's a picture of this bipartable frame that you've got here. It's a cargo bike, and it looks like it's the same model as your standard, but it breaks into two pieces. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, all of my bikes separate in the middle. The frames bolt together in two pieces.
Oh, so every bicycle does this?
Right. Every bike I make is built bipartable. So that's a big deal. If you know, you need to ship one of these bikes that are 8 feet long, it's not so easy. So breaking the frame in half makes things a hell of a lot easier to ship. So the bike separates into two pieces, goes into a relatively small box, and is shippable anywhere via FedEx or UPS or whatever.
That's pretty cool. Are you familiar with, by any chance, the Transportland group that's started to form up here in Portland?
Yeah, just a little bit. I just started hearing about them a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think they're not that old. They've been around for not too long, and I'm hoping to actually get a chance to talk to them sometime as well. But on their website, they had an open letter to Amtrak because a lot of these folks have larger, unusually shaped cargo bikes like the Bullet or something like that. And Amtrak has a policy which prohibits unusually sized or shaped bicycles from being transported on their on their trains. And so it seems like having something that would break apart and something that you could box up a little bit more easily might make that less of an issue.
Yeah, it would. You know, I don't claim that my bikes are folding bikes or anything like that. I mean, it does take some, you know, it's going to take you 10 or 15 minutes to take it apart or put it back together. But yeah, that's maybe a possibility. Maybe some quick release thing in the future would make my cargo bike okay for Amtrak.
Sure. It reminds me a little bit, too, of I met some folks at, I'm trying to remember where it was. It was somewhere up in North Portland last summer who had a co-motion tandem. And co-motion bicycles makes this tandem that also breaks into two pieces, and that makes it a little bit easier to transport as well.
Sure. Yeah. Co-motion is here in Eugene. They're, they're part of the long legacy of Eugene. Eugene's been on the sort of a hub for a lot of great bicycle things and companies for a long, long time. Co-motion is one of them.
Yeah, and you also use their bottom brackets, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Also, all my bikes have eccentric bottom brackets, which are made here locally by Co-motion.
So you could really get a bicycle then if you wanted one that was made entirely manufactured here in the States then?
Yes. Probably. Absolutely.
Well, that's pretty cool. As far as assembly, how long does it take to build one of these?
You mean for me to manufacture a frame?
Yeah, for you, from start to finish, from the time you sit down and say, I'm gonna put this thing together until the time that it's ready to go, how long does it take to kind of go through the entire process?
2 to 3 days.
Well, that's not bad. That's not as long as I was expecting.
I have a pretty good system going here, which is... seems to work okay. It's I make the bikes one at a time, but the individual pieces, the parts of the tube segments are all pre-cut and pre-mitered, pre-bent in small batches. And that seems to work okay. It's a pretty efficient system. It takes a lot of rearranging and constantly reworking the system, but it seems like I have a pretty efficient system going. I also have, I should mention that I have a shop. I share shop space with a guy who is a frame builder, and he helps me with building my bikes. He helps with some machine work and working on the rear ends of the bikes, so that helps a lot.
Oh, nice. That's great. Who is that?
The guy named Rod Bautista.
Okay. Nice. And he is he's a frame builder, but he doesn't do the cargo bike, and he's more of a standard bicycle sort of thing?
Correct. That's right.
Very good. How did you bump into him? How did you guys collide?
A friend of a friend. I think he was, when I moved to Eugene, he was managing a bike shop here in Eugene. And I think a friend just suggested I go meet this guy. He was kind of very interested in the same type of stuff. And so I did, went and met him, and just kind of hit it off. And oddly enough, a funny story is that we discovered shortly after meeting that we're from the same sort of small suburban area of Chicago.
Oh, is that right? And so you guys just happen to be...
Yeah, it was really a weird coincidence. Graduated the same year in high school, and we know... You know, he worked as a teenager. He worked maybe like three blocks from where I lived as a kid, so...
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
Small world, I guess.
Yes, it is.
So we haven't really had too many folks from Eugene. I know Eugene is real close, relatively speaking, compared to longer distances to Portland, but we haven't really had too many folks from Eugene on the program. You want to describe what the town is like as a bicycling mecca? Because I know I've visited a couple times. It's great, but yeah, we just haven't talked too much about it.
Yeah, yeah. Eugene is a funny. It's a funny place. It's a very strange place. One of those weird like vortexes that attract a lot of weirdos for some reason. I don't know, maybe it's just well, the University of Oregon is here, so that so there are a lot of young people here, which means active nightlife and a lot of bars here and good music scene. And but it's also there's a lot of old aging hippies here in this town, and then. Of course, it's Oregon, so there's a lot of, like, redneck types here. And there's also, apparently, this badass anarchist population here a few years back. I think the mayor actually declared Eugene was the anarchist capital of the United States.
Is that right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of weird components here. Traffic is relatively light, so it makes it easy for biking, and there are a lot of people on bicycles here for many different reasons. It's, you know, I think Bicycling Magazine called Eugene one of the top five bike towns in the U.S. a few years back, and Eugene's always, you know, in the top 10 as far as bike-friendly small towns in the U.S. It's a good place to bike, but I have some funny opinions about that. You would think living in a great bike town, you would, being a cargo bike and rack manufacturer, you would sell a ton of stuff here, but it doesn't seem to be that way.
And not necessarily the case, huh?
No. I have a theory that maybe a lot of people are biking here. Maybe they're just too broke to drive.
Well, I think that kind of goes with the territory for a college town. It seems like if you have a bunch of, you know, like 18 to 22 something, going to college and you know, just there on possibly on their own shoestrings, you're not going to have a whole lot of folks that are looking for a really expensive bike. So yeah, I think there's a lot of that here in town, in Portland as well. Like we've got a few colleges around town, and even just people after college, they get their barista degree of whatever variety, and then they move to town and you know, they're looking for a job and can't find one. So it just, you know, turns into just having your own clunker rusty bike and never being able to move up from there. So I'd imagine Eugene is probably kind of the same way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I've sold more of my racks to Japan than to here in my hometown, Eugene. So,
so you're a big exporter.
What's that?
Yeah, you're a big exporter.
Yeah, I suppose so. I am.
Oh, I've been impressed with the infrastructure. There is a lot of off-road paths, like separate bicycle infrastructure around town. The Willamette River winds through Eugene, and there's also a few, I'm trying to remember what the creek is that the other trail runs by, but there's a lot of that. It makes for nice riding if you don't like fighting with traffic.
That's right, yeah. There's a fantastic riverside bike trail all through Eugene. It's really incredible. I should say I'm not down on Eugene at all. I'm not bitter or anything like that. I love this town. I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but I really am not.
Oh, no, I believe you. I think you could probably say the same thing about almost any place.
Yeah, right. Well, this really is a beautiful place. I love so much about it. And for biking, it's gorgeous. The scenery is beautiful. And yeah, it's a great path that goes up and down both sides of the river. And it's real long and winding. A lot of people use that to get through town. There's no auto traffic at all. It's great.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple other things I noticed when I was riding through town. Just the idea that that there are a few bike lanes that are justified to the left instead of the right through the downtown core area. Do you find that makes any sort of difference when you're trying to navigate the core?
I guess I can't. Off the top of my head, I can't place where those are.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I think there might only be one or two, but it was something that I hadn't experienced in almost any other place that I'd gone bicycling.
Yeah, I just seemed to have slipped my mind. It's like I said, it's very easy to get around town on a bicycle here.
Yeah, well, one of the things... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say people are used to seeing bikes and cyclists, and they're very considerate for the most part.
Yeah, that goes a long way. I was thinking the most of the town, the geography of downtown Eugene is pretty flat, which makes it pretty amenable to getting around as well. Like it's not like you can't handle a couple hills, but Eugene is just located on this this wonderfully flat little spot.
Right. Yeah. Sure. There's almost no hills. The outskirts of town, of course, a little hilly, but yeah, you're right. Downtown is relatively flat. It's just right.
I was curious, while we're on the topic of downtown Eugene, I know the rapid transit bus line has been kind of an area of contention. Do you fall on one side or another of that argument?
No, I go back and forth. And, as soon as I develop an opinion, I'm, I talk to somebody who's got the great points that I hadn't considered. So, I really try to stay away from political stuff. I really just try to focus on making bikes and...
Yeah.
I go back and forth sometimes on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's interesting how politicized something like that could become. We cover a little bit of transit stuff too. Mostly we think about bikes, but we like all ways of getting around without having to have your own car. So the case study in Eugene with the rapid transit is particularly interesting. But I was also curious with your messengering experience. Did you find that that you learned anything that you might not have learned about bicycling from having that experience?
No.
I kind of phrased that question a little bit awkwardly too. Sorry.
What do you mean? Help me understand.
I was just thinking if there are aspects of cycling, especially dealing with traffic, that you might not have experienced or learned about unless you had been a messenger.
No, I wouldn't do nothing in particular. I mean, so much of that stuff just becomes intuitive, and it's not easy to. I mean, if you're talking about just riding and traffic in general, and things to look out for, be mindful of, it's difficult to say. But I was just riding on the street and having experience cycling in the city. Sure, that's there is a. There's a lot, I'm sure, that I've gained.
I guess
learned from that.
Just time logged, I suppose, probably helps you in the long run, no matter what kind of cycling it is.
Sure, exactly, of course.
Yeah, San Francisco itself is a pretty hilly place. And were you riding a fixed gear bicycle, or was it some other kind?
No, it was a little after. I'd gone through my fixed gear phase a little earlier than that, and so. Yeah, by the time I got to San Francisco, it was just rather regular single-speed road bike. And the city is hilly, but much of the terrain downtown in the business area where you're doing work is relatively flat. So you see what you might see online or pictures of San Francisco. You see all the hills, which are famous, but yeah, the financial area downtown is relatively flat.
Yeah, that probably makes it a lot easier. I was also curious, are you anticipating the release of Premium Rush with Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah, of course I am. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a good actor. I like that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was talking to my friend just the other night about how that kind of is doing for maybe for bicycling what has been done for cars in the movies for years and years, where it's kind of making it exciting and sexy, and there's going to be big explosions and that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell? I'm all for it.
look forward.
I think it'll be. maybe slightly cooler than that Lane Quicksilver movie with Kevin Bacon that came out years ago.
Yeah, I have not seen that one. I'll have to dig into that someday.
Yeah, it's a real stinker.
Yeah. I was also going to ask if you've done any bicycle touring, if you've got any experience doing camping, long trips, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I have. Let's see. Yeah, years ago I took... actually, right when I was just starting to get into cycling, that's when I took my first long tour. I sort of, on a dare, a friend of mine suggested that I could, you could ride a bicycle down the Pacific Coast. And I said, well, nonsense. Sure, let's try it. So I did that. I got, I had an old mountain bike, and I just hit the road. I rode from San Francisco to Los Angeles.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. It was really eye-opening and empowering and all that stuff to be able to do that and look at a map and see that I had see what I had done. It was really an important time, and so that really got me into cycling. And then I took another trip. I talked a friend of mine into going with me along the Canadian border from Washington State east toward Chicago, and we did that, and it's fantastic. And let's see, last year my wife and I took a trip. I took the cargo bike and she rode her road bike, and we headed south toward San Francisco.
Very nice. Were you going down the coast again, or was that more of an inland route?
Yeah, down the coast, the Pacific Coast, which is just ideal for cycling. It's gorgeous, of course. And
yeah, it's great.
Campground. Yeah, fantastic.
I did the trip in 2009 with my wife from border to border, and it was just amazing, some of the scenery you get to see. The Highway 101 is pretty narrow at points. Do you ever have any considerations for how the cargo bike rides in the lane on a highway of that size as compared to a regular bike?
It's okay. I mean, it's no wider than your shoulders or your handlebars, so it's not a real issue. I seem to do okay. It tracks just fine.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I was also thinking it might actually be a little bit of an advantage. You don't have to deal with panniers on all sides of your bike. You can kind of pack all your stuff into one place. Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was immediately appealing to me to use a cargo bike like this for a long tour. I mean, obviously the bike is very heavy, but it's just so convenient to just pack one single large waterproof bag up there in the cargo area and just throw everything in there. It's just great. You know, you don't have to mess around with small panniers and little compartments, and just throw it all into one big bag and go. It's just real nice.
Yeah, I would imagine you probably bump into enough comments of like, oh, wow, look at that. That's unusual in town. Was that amplified when you were away from town on tour?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the bike itself, and it's such a weird bike, but then it's colored this like neon green color, so it's almost impossible to miss. but I'm sure from experience, when you're doing a trip like this, you meet the nicest people, and everybody's real accommodating and friendly, and so just the same with an unusual cargo bike. Everybody is real nice.
Yeah, it seems to me if you doubt the goodness of humanity, or if you feel like the world might be falling apart and no one has any sort of decency anymore, it does help to go out on tour with a loaded bike and just meet people and see kind of how people respond to strangers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the farther away from a big city, the better is what my experience tells me. Yeah, that's where I've met the nicest people, is far away from big cities.
Yeah, definitely. And you can disagree on politics, you know, if you're meeting someone in a red state and they might be completely different than your blue state perspective, you can still find a lot of common ground. I've always been surprised by that.
Sure. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you so much for talking, Lane. Is there anything else you'd like to kick in here before we sign off?
Oh, thanks. No, I guess not. I really would like to emphasize how grateful I am once again, just to everybody who's been on board with me and kind of watching what I do and supporting and buying my stuff, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it feels real good. It's hard to explain, but it's a nice to know that your work is being appreciated very directly. So it's great. I'm very happy.
Oh, excellent. Well, so it's Setma Racks and Setma Cargo. That's CETMACargo.com.
Yeah, that's right. SetmaCargo.com is the website. And I'm sure if you Google cargo bike Eugene, Oregon, you know, I'll probably show up there somewhere.
Yeah, and you have a plethora of social networking options available at the top of your site. So no matter what someone has and how they like to connect, they can connect with you there.
Correct. Yeah, Flickr, YouTube, this new website called Facebook.
Yeah, I've heard people talking
Pinterest
about that.
Yeah, Flickr, all that stuff. Of course, it's all free stuff. It's all to my disposal, so I use it when I can.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, Lane, and we appreciate the time you spent.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon.
Later. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program. Send us your suggestions for anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you'd like us to drink, or anyone you'd like us to have on the show. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. We can put it on the program for you. Or you can text message us at that same number, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He's on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Keep listening, and we'll see you next time on the Sprocket Podcast. Level check one, level check two. Okay, it seems like I am golden, I think. I think I'm gold. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. Ha-ha, ha-ha. Okay. That's all dumb. Sound checking by yourself. Basically, if you want to explain what it is that you do and how you got started, and then shamelessly self-promote yourself, you know, until you're tired of it. That's sure. What we're looking for.